The question was asked, when we see giants of Torah who are beyond the scope of what we can imagine ourselves being, and then we look back at ourselves and we feel very lowly, how are we supposed to view ourselves? And what's our potential? And what's our worth? Right? That's the question in a nutshell. So, I want to begin by saying that the giants of Jewish history began late. Rabbi Lezer ben Hurkanus was in his late 20s, and he didn't know how to read Shema, and he didn't know benching. And he was Rabbi Akiva's Rebbe. So he was very big. The first Tana to appear in Shas. He didn't know a single pasuk. Rabbi Akiva was 40, and he didn't know a single pasuk. Didn't know Kriyat Shema. So, first of all, we shouldn't give up on ourselves. Meaning, who's to say we won't make it? So before I address the question, I think we have to give ourselves a greater chance. It's true that we might not be as gifted as some of the people who wrote these works. Nonetheless, that doesn't mean we don't have capacity to be great. The question is, are we willing to put in the effort it takes to be great? That's a different question. But before we assume that the par between us and them is because they were more gifted than us, I think the real question is, are we willing to be as dedicated as they were? Not, are we as gifted as they were? Because capacity, well, we have capacity. It's our job to realize our capacity, to realize our potential. So before we cut ourselves short and just say, well, they're geniuses. I like to quote the story of Rav Ovadia Yosef. It's well known that he has memorized thousands, if not tens of thousands of books. Not only Shas and Shulchan Aruch, but many, many, many works. They say about him that his library doesn't house any more books. So he walks into a Sfarim store, reads the Sefer, pays for the Sefer, and leaves it on the shelf. Because he has it. That's it. He learned it. So it's easy to look at him and say, ah, photographic memory. That's why he does it. But the truth is that he works very, very hard. He sleeps about 5 hours a night. So that's true. Most of us wouldn't function on 4 or 5 hours a night. So that's beyond our capacity. But the rest of the day, he's working very hard. And when he was a young man, he didn't have any money. He'd go to the shul where they'd have the Ner Tamid, that one candle that was lit 24 hours a day. And he'd stay by that candle and learn. And that candle is always in the front next to where the Chazan davens. So he'd lean over his book over there on the Chazan Stender and stand by that candlelight and learn. He didn't have money to buy his own candle. This is not someone you read about. This is someone who's living. He lives around the corner, Rav Ovadia Yosef. And that's how he learned. Now, in the winter when it rained, so there was a drip in the ceiling that was directly over his back as he was hunched over the books. So in the back of the shul, they would have old mattresses that were just lying there in case anyone ever needed a place to sleep. He'd put a mattress on his back and continue learning. And when that mattress would be filled with water, he'd put it on the side and take the next mattress. So imagine a young man, your age, younger maybe, leaning over a book with a mattress on his back by one candlelight learning. That's how he became Rav Ovadia Yosef, because he worked very, very hard. They once asked his chavrusa, why is he greater than you? So his chavrusa said, when we'd go to lunch break, I would take bread and butter and he would take bread and butter. He would put his butter in between the bread, smash the sandwich and eat. I would take the knife and smear the butter on my bread. That's why he became Rav Ovadia Yosef and I didn't. Because those seconds weren't only the seconds of the bread and the butter, it was reflected in many seconds of the day, where he didn't take that time. So, it's true that for most people who walk into Machon Meir, if they start doing that, they're going to go crazy. That's not the way they could build. He started at a very young age, and he worked his way up. but he worked his way up. We can't just say, I'm never going to get there. We have to work our way up in a normal, moderate way, but we have to work our way up. So before we address the question comes as a boomerang back to you, and who's to say that you can't be one of the giants who compiles Sfar? I wouldn't say that. So that's point number one. Before we address the question, every person has to realize that there's a question at the root of the matter, and that is maybe we could be that great person. We shouldn't cut ourselves short. So that's point number one. Point number two...
Should it be a straight point? How do you say straight point? It's a Dutch word. Should it be a point to work to, or...
So where should we be aspiring?
Like for everybody, it's a different
thing. Right. There's a famous story Rav Zusha used to say, I'm not worried that when I'm going to get to the world to come, they'll ask me why I wasn't Maimonides. I have an answer. I wasn't given the brains of Maimonides. I wasn't given the strengths of Maimonides. There's a famous story about the Gra, that someone came over to him and said, I want to learn like you and it's not working. So the Gra said, come over here. So the guy steps closer and the Gra puts a finger on his chest and the next thing he knows, he's flying across the room. So the guy said, why'd you throw me? He said, I wanted to show you what I could do with one finger. Could you do that? So the guy said, no. So he said, you see, I'm stronger than you? He said, yeah. So the Gra said, right. I was created different than you. I have different strengths than you have. They say the Gra was extraordinarily strong physically. Like he'd bend iron with his hands. He was extraordinarily strong, and that reflected in many areas of life. Also his stamina. There was a wrestler, Rav Halperin, he just passed away recently, who was a top wrestler here in Israel before he did tshuva. He used to wrestle with Magen Dovin on his underwear. And it was very famous. And then he took that strength and focused it on learning. And he once said that he could sit on a Gemara for 18 hours straight without picking up his head. That same strength that he was able to exert in the ring, he was then able to focus it on his learning. And he compiled 6 or 8 Sfarim. Compiled a much beautiful Sfarim. One of the Sfarim, he also became a great businessman. He opened up the chain of glasses stores named Halperin. And he became extraordinarily wealthy and continued learning and funding important things. When he put out his Sefer, which I think was his last Sefer, about how God runs the world, so he gave it out for free. As a promotion, the Sefer was given out for free the first few weeks. Darkei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's called. A very interesting Sefer. Today you have to pay for it. But that's where a person got to, from dedication. So we don't have the strengths of the Gra. We don't have the strengths of Rav Halperin. I don't have the strengths of Rav Ovadia. But I have my strengths. So that's what Rav Zusha said. I'm not worried when I get to heaven they're going to ask me, why weren't you Maimonides? Because I have an answer for that. I wasn't given the talents of Maimonides. I wasn't given the strength of Maimonides. I'm not worried they're going to ask me why I wasn't the Gra. I'm not worried they're going to ask me why I wasn't the giants of the previous generations. What I am worried about is that they're going to ask me, why weren't you Zusha? Why didn't I live up to who I was supposed to be? That's the scary thing. His name was Zusha. Rav Zusha said about himself, I'm worried they're going to ask me, why wasn't I Zusha? Why wasn't I who I was supposed to be? So that's a very important point. We don't have to be worried why we aren't these people. We have to be worried, are we realizing our own potential? Now that's a double-edged sword. On the one hand, it means I have to realize my potential. On the other hand, it means I don't have to be worried about his potential. I don't have to be worried if the guy next to me is excelling much greater than I am. The first few years I was at Machon Meir, I'd ask Rav Bigun, why we don't give tests? Why don't we have a syllabus? Why don't guys know? The first semester you finish this and you get tested on it. And then that and you get tested on it. And Rav Bigun would keep hammering in until it finally sunk in. It took me a few years to get it. I asked this question numerous times. In the beginning, I didn't understand the answer. But now I do understand the answer. Machon Meir is not about knowing the laws of Shabbos. It's not about knowing the laws of Kashrus alone. It's not about knowing the laws of prayer alone. It's not about keeping Shabbos alone. It's about Judaism. It's about a way of life, which is all-encompassing. Now, how are you going to grade someone? This guy walked into the machon, and he was eating pork every day. This guy walked into the machon, and he has to work on Tosfos, but he never ate pork in his life. So now you're going to give this guy 100 because he figured out the Tosfos, and you're going to give that guy a 30 because he didn't. That's not fair. This guy didn't accomplish more than that guy. You can't gauge each person's accomplishments by a test. You start giving tests, it's as though you're showing people, he's the 100 student, you're the 30 student. He's the A, you're the F. That's not true. The gauge of a person's success in the process of tshuva or in the process of spiritual growth is very personal. It's very individual. And you can't gauge that on a test. So what's the point in giving tests? And the syllabus? Well, the syllabus is catered to each person differently. That's why we have so much one-on-one time. Every person has to grow according to their pace. And what one person's success, you guys remember the story? The guy who walked into Rav Listman's office, we had a one-on-one, slammed his fist on the table, said, "It's been 2 weeks and I haven't beaten anyone up yet." So I'm shaking and I pull the chair back. And to him, that was a great success. He couldn't remember the last time he had 2 weeks straight that he hadn't beaten anyone up. Okay? To him, that was a success. So how are you going to grade that? So that's why we don't have tests. And that's why it's not fair when people compare themselves to other people. We have a class online about what to do when you're suddenly hit the realization that your host's 6-year-old child knows the parsha better than you do. So you're sitting at the Shabbos table and you're trying to say Dvar Torah, and the 6-year-old corrects you and he's right and you're wrong. So you feel like 2 cents. But you shouldn't feel like 2 cents, because you knew Mary had a little lamb much better than him at age 6. So to him, this is like Mary had a little lamb. Good for him. He's lucky. He grew up with it. You know, my kids don't know Hilchos Brachos, but when they sit down to eat cereal, they know how to look at a cereal box and figure out what the bracha is, because I explained it to them. So they're lucky. What other people learn when they're 25, they're getting on a silver platter. Does that make them greater? No, they're starting off at a nicer place. Your kids, Bezrat Shem, will start off there too. So you can't gauge yourself based on what do I know and what does he know. You weren't given the opportunities he was given. I would often be frustrated when I'd realize what age I was and what I accomplished. And I had a roommate who always knew how to put me in my place. So he used to tell me, "When did you start learning Gemara?" "You started learning at 18, at 19. So when you read the Chafetz Chaim, you know, or you read a Rabbi Akiva Eiger, if he started learning Gemara at 7 or 9 or 12, and he was capable of learning at 7 or 9 or 12, or had the Rebbe who could teach him that, so of course when he was 21, this is what he was accomplishing. You're not behind. You didn't start where he started. And you don't have the Rebbe he had. And maybe you don't even have the head he had. Maybe. But we can't gauge ourselves that way. I often tell guys, "When did you walk into Machon Meir? 2 years ago? 3 years ago?" "Oh, so you're 3 years old. You're doing great for a 3-year-old. No, you got to look at it that way. You're starting fresh. The fact that you know how to tie your shoes and you've taken college courses and you might have a degree or two doesn't mean that in the realm of Judaism you could gauge yourself that way. This is new. So it's not fair to put ourselves down and say, "Hey, where can I get to?" But by the same token, you also have to realize that the accomplishments of keeping a Shabbos, when a person is not accustomed to keeping Shabbos, are tremendous. And this brings us to the final point, the point that the Mabit makes. The Mabit was a contemporary of Rav Yosef Karo, and he writes in the beginning of his book, Beit Elokim, he says, we have to realize that Hashem gives each person wages based on their personal gauge, meaning if a person had $100 and gave $1 to charity, he gave 1%. Then you have a millionaire who gave $1,000 to charity, and that was not 1%. It wasn't even 0.5%. So then this guy's $1 gets him more reward in the world to come than the other guy's $1,000. Because the way we're gauged is on a very personal level. So a person will say, what did I accomplish today? Rabbi Akiva Eiger, you hear about Rav Kook. He'd finish 30 daf every day. Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos, Rishonim, Halacha. 30 daf a day. You hear that. You feel like 2 cents. I learned by a Rav Pesen Zatzal. He used to learn a page at a time. When he'd look at pages of Talmud, he'd see the whole page at a time. Boom, page, page, page. I could barely see 2 words at a time. He'd see a page at a time. But I don't have to be him. I wasn't given his skill. I'm gauged based on what did I accomplish in this world. So I'm not necessarily going to get less because I accomplished less. The question is, how did I accomplish vis-a-vis my potential, not vis-a-vis someone else's potential? So the first point we said is not to cut ourselves short. We still might make it. The question is, are we willing to be dedicated and do it? The second point we made is that no one's going to ask us why we didn't accomplish what someone else accomplished, because our job is to accomplish what we can accomplish, not what someone else can accomplish. The story of Rav Zusha. And the third point we made is that our accomplishments are measured vis-a-vis ourselves. And as such, what might seem like a small accomplishment compared to someone else is really a great accomplishment compared to ourselves. And that's why we should give ourselves credit and not be down on ourselves when we compare ourselves to others, but on the contrary, look at ourselves, look at what we've accomplished, and see the great value in it, and realize that it's not just we who see the great value in it, but when Hashem looks at us, He also sees the great value in it and is very happy with us. He's not expecting us to do more than that. God doesn't have unfair expectations of His creatures. He knows our weaknesses, He knows our potential, He knows our limitations, and He doesn't expect more than that of us. And on the contrary, when people try to overexert themselves and what they call in English overachieving, which in Hebrew they call underachieving, because if you're going to try to achieve more than you really can, then you're going to lose out. You're not going to gain more. So that's the concept in Talmud. Tafasta merube lo tafasta. If you try to get too much, you're not going to get anything. So we don't have to overexert ourselves. We have to work at a normal pace, and we have to be happy with what we've accomplished, to see the good in it, to see that that's our job. And at the end of the day, we're not any far behind. We're not less than someone else just because they know more. And this idea is also crystallized in a story quoted in the Sefer Maasiyot. One of the great rabbis, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, asked Elio who would he sit next to in the world to come. And Elio showed him a person and showed him the city he lives in. And so he traveled out to that city to see who that person was. Now you have to understand, this Rabbi Yeshua was a huge sage. We're talking about one of the greatest sages in the Talmud. And he wondered, who is this person? He's not such a learned person. So he finally caught up with the person and asked him, tell me, what did you do that's extraordinary in your life? And the man says to him, well, I have a good business. And one time there were some merchants passing by with a girl, and she told us she was Jewish. So they were selling her into slavery, and I bought her. And I took her into my house, and I brought her up as though she was one of my own kids. And then when the time came she had to get married, I told my son, you marry her, and she's a good girl, and I'll support you guys. I'll give you everything you need, everything she needs. I got her a great dowry. I got her great clothing. We set up the wedding date. We invite everyone of the city to come and partake of the wedding. I buy a house. I buy good clothing for my son. I buy him whatever he needs to get married. I set up a room in my house for him to live in. And the day of the wedding comes. So she's dressed up and he's dressed up. And he's getting ready to go down to cover her and bring her into the chuppah. And I walk out to see how my guests are doing, and I see everyone's happy, except for one person. I see a man sitting on the side crying. So I go over to that person and I say, look, I want everyone to be happy. What's wrong? So the guy doesn't want to answer me. And finally, when I prod him and push him, he tells me, look, I don't know what to say, but the girl that's about to get married was betrothed to me. Boom. So I asked him, prove it. So he started giving me signs, things that he knew about her. I go and I check and I see he's right. I go over to the girl and I say, tell me, there's a man out there who says you were betrothed to marry him. So the girl says, it's true. There was a man I was betrothed to marry. And then I was taken into captivity and you bought me. So the guy says, oh. Goes over to his son and says, look, son, you listened to me to marry this girl. Now I have really good advice for you.
Right.
The kid says, Dad, I listened to you the first time. I listened to you the second time. What do you say? He says, look here. Turns out she was betrothed to marry someone else. Come with me. We'll walk him down to the aisle. We'll give him a good haircut. Get him a good barber. We'll get him a good shower. Give him all the finest clothes I got you. And afterwards, don't worry, I'll repay you. I'll get you nice clothing. I'll get you a nice girl. You'll do good in life. But let's make them happy and give them all this wedding. Let's do it for them. And my son said, Dad, if that's what you say, I'm going to listen. Fine. And we called the guy over. We told him what we're doing. We got him a great barber. We gave him a great bath. We got him all dressed up. We brought him down. We married them off. We danced with them. We sang with them. We did the whole wedding for them. And then we brought them into the house. He got that room that my son was supposed to get. They lived in that room. I took good care of them, gave them gifts. And when they were ready, I set them off, and they went their merry way. That's the one extraordinary thing I could tell you. And when he heard this, Rabbi Yehoshua was happy. He said, okay, now I'm happy to know who my neighbor is in the world to come. Now pause for a second. The story is phenomenal. The man was a giant. I'm not coming to belittle him. But he did a great act. Rabbi Yehoshua lived a life of greatness. That story always gives me great encouragement because it reminds me that there's more than one way to get to the top of the mountain. We keep thinking the only way is through becoming a giant like the Chafetz Chaim. Yes, a giant like Chafetz Chaim got very high up on the mountain, but there are other ways to get there. Each person has to do the best they can with the tools that they were given. I don't know about that.
I don't know either. It's a question.
So I didn't say it exactly that way. I said to accomplish as much as your potential allows. I didn't say to exert as much effort as you can. Those are two different things. We still have to accomplish. It's not enough to say, hey, I would have liked to.
No, but you're trying to accomplish.
You have to try in the right direction. You have to be working to do what's right. Hashem sheds three tears every day. One of them is for the people that are barking up the wrong tree, people that are pursuing dreams that are wrong for them. One of the tears Hashem sheds every day is for the people who are trying to accomplish something which they shouldn't be trying to accomplish. They're trying to live a dream that's just not theirs. That's not going to be theirs. So it's not enough to say, I tried very hard. You have to think about it. You have to try in the right direction.
Yeah. Okay.
The other two tiers?
How do you know, first of all, how to gauge your potential, and how do you know which direction you're supposed to go in?
That's a long discussion. I think that a person has to experiment a little bit, meaning let's take the example of learning Torah as an example. A person sees that he's doing well, that he's skilled at it, that he has potential to grow in it, so he keeps trying. A person sometimes doesn't see that he's succeeding, he still keeps trying. There are different formulas in the Talmud how long to try before you give up. But basically, you have to try a few years and see if you can do it. Now, sometimes a person says, I can't do it financially. I can't. Maybe I could grow in Torah. So then a person has to figure out what the balance that's right, given his circumstance. There's growth in many areas. We have 613 mitzvot. There's the person who set up Agudat Efrat. So he saved over 10,000 Jewish babies from abortions. So that was his strength. He saw there was a need, and he saw a calling, and he created an organization that fulfilled his dream. You have Rav Burstein, who set up an organization that helps fertility and medicine, helps couples get pregnant, helps guide them through the labyrinth of the medical society. Yeah. So he created something that would be the fulfillment of a dream. You have many things, be it Tefillin Beit El, be it Tefillin Oter Yisrael, be it up in the Golan, that factory that creates beautiful chairs for shuls all over the world. They create the benches, the chairs for shuls. Kibbutz Lavi. Different people have different talents, and Kabedet Hashem Mehonecha. A person has to honor Hashem from his wealth, from his strength. Every person has to accomplish certain mitzvot. We have 613 mitzvot. Every Jew has to learn Torah. Every Jew has to give charity. Every Jew has to be a kind person. But where is one's skills, and where should one focus one's efforts? So a person has to see for himself. But a person also has to know that Torah is something for everyone. Every person should be learning Torah. And if I'm not where I'd like to be today, so in the course of time, I'll get there. You join a Daf Yomi, you learn some Medrash, you learn Parsha with Rishonim, you learn Mishnah. Torah isn't the only Talmud. A person should learn, and a person should also be influential. A person could be the president of the shul, the gabbai of the shul. A person could be a fundraiser in a shul. Different people have different talents. But a person has to see where his talents are and where he could serve Am Yisrael well. We had a guy who was very good with kids. So he wasn't the biggest Talmud Chacham, but he started a youth group. So he got the kids off the streets. And in his youth group, he taught them to be respectful. And he taught them not to litter. And he taught them how to help people. And he got them involved with helping other people. And he changed the lives of many people. The same guy, when he came to the army, so they kept shifting him from office to office. Finally, he realized he's not getting enlisted so fast. Every office they'd send him to, he'd sit down, strike up a conversation with the people around him, start telling Kaulbach stories. He's a graduate of Machon Meir. He'd sit down, start singing songs, telling Kaulbach stories. The Kirov he's been doing. He's still going through the offices. This is a story that's ongoing. They keep telling him, tomorrow go to this office, they'll enlist you. Go to that office, they'll enlist you. So I bumped into him 2 weeks ago. He told me they keep shifting me. But after a day or two of sitting there and thinking they're going to enlist me finally, I realized, hey, I'm meeting so many soldiers. Let me lighten up their lives. So he's a source of light wherever he goes. Different people have different strengths. You know, that's his strength. He doesn't speak Hebrew that well. You know, it's not his mother tongue. But he speaks Hebrew well. And well enough to tell a story. Well enough to get people interested. So he's doing his thing. And I don't think that's his goal for life. That's where he's shining his light right now. Sometimes people find goals for life. But I think a lot of it is about seeing where our strengths lie. And that's something we discover as we go along. There are 613 mitzvot out there. You know, I could tell you our daughter Esther is named after a woman who, when she was an old woman, she was in Florida, and there were a lot of women there, old women, who didn't do anything for Shabbos. So she would go around, she'd bake challahs and make fish every Thursday, and then Friday she'd go around and bring all the women a platter of fish and challahs and 2 candles. And she told them, if you light Shabbos candles, I'll bring you challah, my homemade challah and fish every Shabbos. And she had a whole community of people lighting Shabbos candles thanks to her. And we know that from the Shabbos candles, other things happen. There are many stories like that. People end up making their own mission. Tov?